Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is September 11th, 2014, and 13 years, another nice prime number, 13 years since the famous alleged terrorist attack on the United States. And by the way, if you still think that this was done by Arabs with box cutters, please go pound your head against the wall about 10 times and come back and start listening again. You know, it's amazing the amount of distortion that can be presented to the public. And to this day, people are still, you know, following down that path. Not only that, but just about everything, if not everything, that's presented to you in the so-called real world. The new book called McCanny Wing Generator. Hopefully everybody that has ordered is getting their emails with the download links. It has been just an absolute zoo this past week getting the emails out to the people who ordered. I'll talk about the book tonight and some other issues regarding the book. It's a very, very important book. And, well, like all of my books, I highly recommend it. It really takes a new turn from the past books that I've put out. All of the books have practical side to them. However, this book goes directly at probably the major issue in the world today, which is energy. It goes directly at it, and it also tells you about the history that I've gone through with this project, and therefore the rather above normal cost of the book. This book is meant for developers, people looking for patent licensing issues and rights. There's a lot involved in this book, so it's not just a book. It does many things. It's a practical guide to the future of energy. Already, people from the energy industry are looking at this. People who have not been exposed to my energy work before, in relative to electrical production and the wing systems, that's something that really I've kept under the cards close to the table, so to speak, because I've been trying to develop this, and every time it gets close to being off the ground, the investors disappear, and literally disappear. In some cases, I don't even know if these people are still alive, and I have other ways of contacting people, not just their cell number, whatever, but these people have literally disappeared as far as I can tell. But that's another story in itself. Tonight I'll also be talking about the resistance movements that are developing across North America and the world regarding wind resistance. In other words, trying to stop the three-blade wind generator systems installations from being placed around the world. And people have realized that these are subsidy scams by large corporations who have government officials in their back pocket. But remember that this was the intention all along, was to provide alternative energy meant to fail. And I've talked about this many times on my program in the past. Any alternative energy program that has seen the light of day, been funded, or in the case of the three-blade wind generators, which is the most prominent alternative energy sector out there, The government subsidies were meant to fuel these industries, and when they were obvious total failures, they will have consumed all of the alternative energy money so that nothing real could ever be done, and also gain the ire of the public, which they're doing. So organizations like NAPAW, North American People Against Wind, a vast organization that's growing by leaps and bounds and notoriety to prevent wind energy from ever getting its ugly nose in their faces again. But the problem is they're playing right into the hand of the big energy corporations like General Electric, Siemens, who guess what? They also have a hand in building nuclear power plants. Woo! A little conflict of interest, possibly. But, yeah. So, anyway, I'll be talking a bit about that. First of all, I want to give Home Depot an honorable mention. Like Target, they have been hacked. What are these people doing holding databases of customer credit card data? What on earth do they think they're doing? When you order, for example, from my webpage, you go, you don't really know it, but when you click on an order button on my webpage, you go directly to Visa. That's a secure web ordering page within Visa, and that's where your credit card information is taken. First of all, you select the items on my webpage, for example, that you want to order. Then when you go to checkout, at that point, when you hit that checkout button, then you go off to Visa land. And I don't ever carry or hold or know your data regarding credit cards. So what is Home Depot, what is Target doing maintaining customer databases on credit cards? But in a world, now my most recent book prior to the Wing Generator book was called Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. And I talk about the devastation in the world of secure computing. That secure computing is not secure. These companies that hold databases and then pay somebody for secure firewalls or whatever transmission, it's bogus. They're paying money, and the people in the industry, in the computer secure computer industry, know this. They're selling them a pig in a poke, and they're not saying anything. It's also in the government's best interest not to allow this information into public hands, because they would have to retool. The way they get into your computer also is using these same bogus RSA encryption codes or firewalls, etc. These are called the public key encryption based on prime numbers. And in my book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, I tell you how to do it. This ain't no secret. It wasn't a secret 7 years ago when I released my Calculate Primes book on March, March 15th, 2007. That's when the Calculate Primes book came out. That was an immediate signal to the entire computing world that RSA code public key encryption was broken. Don't use it anymore. Get out of it. But they didn't, and now they're continuing to sell this broken encryption systems, and the Home Depot fiasco is the result of that. If you have not heard about this, since my investigations have come up to the following. Since about April 4th of this year, any transactions through Home Depot with a credit card or debit card probably is in the hands of some scoundrels. Let's put it that way. Who knows who the people are? Who knows if it's their competitors? I always said that it was very suspect when Target was hacked last year prior to Christmas. I wonder if Walmart had anything to do with that. Just to help the other major stores, that's just my kind of dark side looking at the possibilities there. Not that Walmart would do anything under the table or obscure, but Home Depot being hacked, these companies, they don't know what they're doing. They in investigating, okay, so ever since April 4th, is the date I was told. I would not hold that with a lot of confidence, but post April 4th, after April 4th of this year, any credit card or debit card transactions at Home Depot would be suspect. So you got to watch those cards, possibly cancel them and get new ones. And your credit card company would be happy to help you with that, and especially look and see if there's been any transactions, unauthorized transactions done at Home Depot on your cards. I was told that the debit cards were more susceptible because more typically on your credit cards, many people have fraud protection, but this is not the case with debit cards. So at any rate, take that for what it's worth to the bank, but watch your credit card, debit card activity for any unauthorized activity from Home Depot. And in this world of credit card theft, identity theft, you should be looking at any of your accounts. One thing I was told by a banker is even with checks, a good thief can duplicate checks. Somebody comes to you and you write them a check for some service or activity or whatever. Many people can take that check, duplicate it, and then write themselves a check with your signature on it for a large amount of money and take it to the bank and get it cashed. And once they got the money, it's out of your account. So checking accounts are relatively dangerous. Unless you know who you're giving the check to, be very skeptical, let's put it that way. Here's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting that one day you're going to wake up and find that your bank accounts are empty, your credit cards are full, the electric company, the utility companies, or other bills, it might be your television bill, your cable bill, or whatever, are going to come up to you and say, you owe us for the last 10 months of service, which you haven't paid. And you're going to go, well, of course I paid it. You're going to go to your bank, and they're not going to have any records for you. The credit card, the utility or the television company, cable company, whatever, is going to say, well, you owe us this money. And you're not going to have any record of it. So I tell people, keep a paper record of your bills, when it was paid, what account you paid with, etc., and keep those on file. Because if not, you're going to get a whammy someday, and you're not going to have any paperwork to support it because you're depending on electronic records at your bank, you're depending on your utility or cable company or whoever it is to keep good records, the city, municipality for water, whatever it is. And in a court of law, you're going to have zero to stand on unless you have some kind of paper record and some kind of verifiable information. This is going to happen. It's going to happen in this country, and it's going to go upside down financially. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Because these banks, remember recently the virus that got into the banking system. I have personal friends who have trouble. I won't even list all the banks, but the banks seem to think that they have upgraded their security when, in fact, their security is garbage. They're depending on archaic encryption firewall systems that couldn't protect they couldn't protect anything. They're worthless. At any rate, okay, so that enough said about that. Let me dive directly into the new book here. And once again, appreciate people who have supported this effort. And this book is about patents, copyrights, trade secrets, information, and it's primarily aimed at the audience who would actively develop. For the person who's just interested in a good read, understand that you're buying into something more than just an average book. You're also buying into understanding of a technology which is upon us. Let me talk a little bit at first about what I call distributed energy. I've been talking about these things for many weeks on my radio show, but very important part of this is distributed energy. Let's go back to, I can't even put a year on it. Back to the days when IBM mainframes ruled the roost. We're talking early 1980s. Corporations like banks, oil companies, major corporations had an IBM mainframe down in the basement someplace. It was programmed, and this computer held all the corporate financial records, and the financial director and center of computing, IT it was called, was this kind of the hub of the business, especially for big businesses that held a lot of data, etc., like that. All of a sudden, something happened. A small desktop television screen monitor hooked to a rather bulky, high energy consumption piece of computing hardware was able to do word processing, where you would type a letter on a keyboard, it would go down into the computer, then appear on the screen. And something happened where they could now attach these to the central computer. So you had many people all working off of that central computer system. It was fairly well enclosed, and the communication between these was done on something that I worked on personally. It's something I did for probably 10 years of my life. A lot of people may not know this, but I was a principal systems engineer in an electronics company that built IBM mainframe telecommunications computers. That's what I did. I was the guy who everything had to pass through the functional specifications and the hardware design and the software design to marry the two together. And these were highly secure computing telecommunications facility. There were computers and all of the facilities that went with them. That's what I did for about 10 years of my life, besides keeping up with my Comet work, my Electric Universe work, etc. So at any rate, along about the early 1980s, these computers began to develop and have a bit of a brain. So some of the processing could be offset into these computers. Somebody with a lot of vision and some savvy, a guy named Bill Gates, who, by the way, is not one of my favorite people anymore since he caved to the New World Order and became one of them with his billions. Him and the Belinda Gates Foundation do a lot of New World Order work, let's just put it that way. So Billy ain't one of my best buddy friends. But at any rate, be that as it may, he did something very intelligent. He gave away the operating system which would run as the basis on these distributed computing systems. He gave it away, knowing that he would be the person that had the inside track to write software to run on that operating system base. Nobody in the computing world of IBM mainframes, Honeywell, Unisys, Control Data, none of those people had a clue that distributed computing would take over the way it did. Now, on a small handheld computer or a little palm computer, you have more computing power and memory than 10 IBM mainframes of 1982. Okay, so something happened here, but at a key position in time and space, a guy named Bill Gates had the vision that to give away the operating system. Nobody ever had given away anything in the computer industry before. They were all scrambling to patent and sell and corner markets and force customers into proprietary types of computing scenarios, hardware, software, etc. But nobody ever gave anything away. This was a first. Now, let's fast forward to 2014. I'm introducing this energy book, basically dealing with distributed energy and what I call the wing generator, which is a large-scale can be small scale, but essentially the whole goal here is to build large scale wing generators. And I want to be specific that I can specifically do not call this a wind generator, because I don't want it associated with the myriad of bad design wind generator products that have come before. This can one for one replace nuclear power generators and coal generators. And that's the whole idea. But to do that, we have to understand how to distribute this energy and how to manage it. So that's the whole concept of distributed energy. In the book, basically, I'm offering an open architecture which allows developers the ability to very inexpensively purchase the licensing and use this as an open architecture. And the whole point is that within 10 years, my payback is that we will be free from nuclear, coal, oil, every form of energy. We'll be driving electric cars. We'll be storing energy in our houses in battery packs, and battery technology will be advanced. The automobile industry will be a thing of the past, the gasoline motor, and we will be driving electric cars. And anybody trying to sell you a gasoline car is going to have a big hole in his pocket, because there ain't going to be anybody putting money there. Electric cars are the way of the future, but we cannot provide energy for electric cars by burning nuclear fuel or burning coal and then converting it into electric at about a 25% efficiency rate, shipping it off to you at the consumer end, and you're charging your batteries directly and then driving around. That is a horrible system. That's a horribly inefficient, costly system. It's just literally better to burn the gasoline. Gasoline is the highest energy content fuel known to man. For weight, energy per volume, however you measure it, gasoline is the most available and efficient and cost-effective method for driving cars if you compare it to burning nuclear and coal at an energy plant, converting it to electricity, and then distributing it to the public. That's terrible. But there's this myth, and you can only call it that. It's like a socially acceptable myth that people have obtained because of the bizarre way energy is treated in the world and controlled. There's a myth that you have to burn high energy content fuels, change it to steam, to drive electrical turbines. And that's the only way. Alternative energy has always been seen as subordinate, small, insignificant, uncompetitive in terms of its ability to provide real energy. When you look at the energy production charts, or pie charts, if you want, there are many different ways to illustrate this, but when you show the energy pie chart of production, it's about, roughly, depending on whose statistics you use, about worldwide, that is, about 33% coal, 33% nuclear, and 33% oil. A lot of energy production today is done with natural gas because it's more available in certain areas. Some areas use number two fuel oil, and there's some other sources of heat that are used for creating steam to drive turbines in a power plant. But those are the big ones. Now, you know, imagine what people cannot imagine is that there would be an alternative energy solution, which I call the wing generator, that could provide the amount of power delivered in a nuclear power plant. People go, well, what are you talking about? That's impossible. Because they're used to the stupid, ridiculous, totally inefficient, totally inept three-blade wind generators, maximum output 1.5 megawatts. The big ones today, they're talking about 3 megawatts. Siemens just came out with a 3-megawatt generator, but At peak output, they say 3 megawatts, but the annual average is maybe a tenth of that. When you include inefficiencies due to maintenance and downtime, it's way below that. So let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say that it's 15% efficient. You're talking about 450 kilowatts coming from something that costs you $1 million or $2 million to install. And all of that money for installation comes from government subsidies. It's just a racket. It's a racket with no payback. And that's how people view alternative energy. Let's look at the big solar array, which is now online down in Arizona, Kingman, Arizona. Great big array of mirrors, killing birds like crazy, but it's not producing that much power, folks. And at peak production, that's what they always like to point at peak production, all the politicians and the corporate officials like to point at it, and they want to build more. Why? Because they're getting subsidized. They couldn't do that. If somebody had to walk up to the table and write a check, they couldn't do that at all. Nor could you install 3-blade wind generators that are going to lose money, not produce any power, make the public horribly angry. There just isn't a payback in any manner or form, let alone economic, unless the government pays them to do it. That's where the profit comes from. In Canada right now, Ontario is having a huge backlash of citizens. They just voted down a 3-blade wind generator installation off the shores of Lake Superior. And the people are extremely angry. Local municipalities have outlawed 3-blade wind generators. Why? Very simply put, they don't work. Plus, their energy rates are going sky high. Wait a minute. They're subsidizing 3-blade wind generators to the tune of $500,000 per tower per year. Now, sit down in your chair, put on your seatbelt, and get a hand on that number. A wind tower, they can put them up efficiently now for $500,000. And the investors can put that money down, or a bank can invest the money. They get that money back in the first year, and actually, because they can write it out over a number of years over the investment cycle, they get the bulk of that $500,000 the first year, and it goes right in the pockets of the installers and the corporations doing this. It is a sweet deal if you're on the receiving end. But if you're the public that's paying for this, and having your electric bill increase and double and triple, while the Canadian hydro plants, the dams up there, the rivers that are producing hydro, they're selling it to the United States at a premium, and the Canadians are getting, once again, let's put the mildly, they're getting shafted because they, you know, and their price of electricity is going up. They're paying more and getting less, and the electric companies are just making a giant profit off of this, selling the hydro to the United States, and in the case of wind, subsidizing to the tune of $500,000 per year, per tower. That's good business. Man, I'd love a business like that. So these companies are just biting at the bit from all over the world to come into Canada to install these 3-blade wind generators and get on the government dole. At any rate, that is the name, that is the black eye that wind generation has in the industry. So you have, like I say, the organization North American People Against Wind. You know, they're mad. They're mad. They've been taken to the cleaners. And now the government officials won't listen to them. It won't give them an ear. It turns a deaf ear to these poor people who are paying all of this money and getting, you know, having a 200-foot wind tower being put in their backyard. You see houses, schools with a big wind tower there groaning and moaning, and nobody can sleep at night. The housing values are dropping through the basement. Nobody can sell their homes. Who's going to buy a home with a 200-foot wind tower in the backyard? I ain't. Nobody is. And these people are financially devastated, so that these few corporations and their government politic buddies, who I'm sure are getting kickbacks, can put this devastation in all around the countryside. Okay, so that's the name that wind has. And now understand that this was intentional. 10, 20 years ago, when GE and Siemens went into major league into the wind energy industry and pushed this three-blade wind design, do you think they knew then that these things would never work? Well, of course they did. They knew that the end result would be, first of all, scarf up all of the economic incentives from government subsidies in sight, and when all the money is gone, shut it down and leave it, and hey, run with the money. But what they really did is had a profitable little side venture that was intended to fail, suck up all the alternative energy money that came out of government and private sources, and once it was all over, forced their nuclear power plant industry into the limelight for the future forever. Wow. When you understand what's going on here, you're going to start to understand that the political forces, the engineering forces behind this have been set for decades. We are now seeing the culmination of this. Possibly this is why my financial end, when I was working with the Wing Generation, the Wing Generation projects, disappeared into the woodwork, because this is a project that will work. This is a project that will produce significant amounts of energy, and that's not exactly what the energy companies are interested in seeing. I gave an example the other day. I was talking on John Moore's show about automobiles. Look around at the automobiles. All of them have a little flat back on the back end. That's not an aerodynamic shape. That's a vacuum-producing flat back end that literally sucks your car backwards as you drive down the road. It's not aerodynamic. It causes you to burn a lot more fuel. And the faster that you go, the bigger the vacuum. You can see this at work on a cold winter day up in the northern states, driving around. You'll see the exhaust from the car hovering around the back of the car. It doesn't go out and go away. It hovers around the backside of the car in that vacuum. So you can see this at work. It's literally pulling you backwards, in causing you to burn more gasoline. Do you think that the engineers in Detroit or wherever they design these cars, do you think that they really don't understand that basic principle? Understand that big oil has always driven the automobile industry. They are deathly afraid of the Tesla cars. Right now, Musk is building, got the go-ahead for a mega factory in Nevada, a small town, underdeveloped town in Nevada, going to put a factory that is going to put out economical Tesla electric, pure electric automobiles for the public. He's also building a factory for batteries. He gave away all his patents on batteries to anybody that would like to use them, but at the same time, he's building a factory that'll produce more batteries than any other combined factories, battery factories in the world, and the whole purpose of these are to have them available at inexpensive prices for his cars, electric cars. These are not hybrid cars. These are pure electric cars that are going to have a range of 300 to 500 miles once they get these babies going, and it's going to be available to you for under the price of a gasoline-powered car. They're going to have battery charging stations around the country where you can charge up in just about the same amount of time as it takes to pump gas into a car, and you're going to be off and running. So electric is on its way. The problem is, how do you get clean electric energy to the user? That's what I'm here to do. The Wing Generation system depends on distributed energy. It's a super important topic. It's described in greater detail in my book. But understand that not only do you just throw a new energy development at the onto the drawing board and out into the public, you have to coordinate this into the grid that we currently have. I'll talk just a second about the smart grid. By the way, all of these topics are covered more extensively in my book that's available on the webpage right now. And by the way, you can get this book also for free if you purchase more than $400 worth of water filter or other books or the Recalendar Sun Star Clock, any of those other products combined. Total purchase of over $400, you can get this new book for free. That's just another way of getting the book, but that's on the webpage. But there are so many issues involved in introducing this, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and probably it won't. The United States will not be the first place on the planet to implement these. But now that we have electric cars that are going to come online, we have to go to a power source, an energy source that is green, that is economical, that truly provides us with the energy. You know, burning nuclear and coal to provide energy for electric cars doesn't make sense. So, and what Musk is doing is he's forcing the energy industry, in a sense, forcing the hand by producing the batteries and automobiles. Now, there's another huge market for his batteries, and that is simply in the household. Here's what I envision for myself in the not too distant future. I'm going to buy an electric car. I'm going to have a wind generation system which produces electrical energy from the wind at my residence, wherever that is. I'm going to be producing electric power that goes into my batteries, in my car, and in my house. I'm going to have an inverter. I'm going to have a primarily DC system in my household, but a lot of it will be alternating current. In fact, I'm going to tell you something. I already have that now. I'll just tell you a little secret. I don't use any electricity from the public power grid. I have not for a very long time. That's simply a public statement. And if I travel, if I go to other places, of course, I have to buy into whatever's in existence there. I have not lived on the grid for many years. And so I'm living what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about, and I know you can do it too. One of the issues with alternative energy, the wing systems, is that there's going to be some variability. But in systems that are this big, if it's not blowing hard in New York, it's going to be blowing hard out in the Nevada desert. If it's not blowing hard there, where it's going to be in West Texas or out in the ocean off of San Diego, or up by Seattle, we're going to have a distributed network of large wind generators that's going to keep our grid full of energy. When it's there, you're going to be loading it into the battery pack in your house, and that's going to act as a buffer where transients in the power distribution will be buffered, and that'll provide a constant source of energy for your house or location or industry or whatever it is. That is also the part of bringing the price of batteries down. You don't need, now there's also a misconception. If you have energy that's flowing in from, say, a wing system and it's sufficient, then you don't need a battery pack to run all of your facilities. If you have a factory, you don't need enough battery pack to run your factory all day on just the batteries. The batteries simply act as a buffer and to maintain the voltage. It's kind of like a capacitor in a alternating current system translated into a DC current system. You have some kind of device there which maintains the voltage. The battery does that very nicely. It not only acts as a capacitor and a storage device, but it maintains the voltage. at a flat line set level. So a battery is a very important part of the home system in the distributed energy systems. And how do I know this? Because I'm doing it every day. I live by these systems, and I know how they work, and they can work for you. So what does this do to big energy? Well, the big energy companies that rely on burning something to create fuel are living in the days just like IBM executives were living in the days of IBM mainframes. I worked in that industry back in the 1980s. I know, I saw firsthand the executives blind, absolutely blind to the fact that distributed computing was coming down the pike and that their IBM mainframes were going to be dinosaurs in a few years. None of them, I guarantee you, none of them saw it coming. Although all of us engineers knew it was coming, we told them, their brains were turned off. The IBM mainframe was going to live forever. That was what they thought. Now we're in a similar situation with energy. The energy corporations, big oil, nuclear, coal, natural gas, and the other forms of burning energy, burning something to create energy, those industries think that they're locked in forever. As I said, General Electric, Siemens, the big corporations that have a big hand in nuclear and other forms of energy systems have been controlling the alternative energy market to destroy it, not to succeed. They're not in there to succeed. They're in there to make sure it never sees the light of day. That's what they're there for. And they're coming to fruition. So the only problem is there are other forces in the industry. People are going to produce electric automobiles. Musk is not the only one that's going to be producing automobiles. He is going to see some competition come online because he's trying to duplicate the Detroit style of automobile. I foresee automobiles very light, very streamlined, very economical, very lightweight, that would allow you to run around town. We're going to see changes in the next 10 years that are going to rival the computer industry in the 1980s. We're going to see advancements that allow people to live without the gross amount of energy we're burning today. Do you know that the energy that's produced today is produced because of the misconception of the public that we need all of this energy to support our economy? That is the biggest myth on the planet. And the wars in the Mideast, I mean, these constructed myths, on the evening news, you know, the economy, the jobless rate, all of this false economy, I mean, the way people are living today is astounding. I have stepped off of that merry-go-round a long time ago and have not looked back since. You don't have to live that way. You don't have to follow those directives. And one by one, people are figuring this out and simply stepping off, saying, I can't do this anymore. You know, the taxation, the banking rules, the insurance rules, the government rules, everybody has a hand in your back pocket. And they've gotten there because they're all protecting your safety. It's for the children, remember. And like Obama, I couldn't believe this moron, two-faced, double-split-tongue politician, saying that he's trying to shut coal plants down for the future of children. No, he's shutting coal plants down so that his buddies in the nuclear industry have a monopoly. It's as simple as that. So let's understand, and by the way, let me just give a quick rundown on the current status of the nuclear industry. The nuclear power plant fleet of the United States is outdated. The majority of nuclear power plants in the United States are past their projected lifetimes. They should have been shut down long ago. The fuel that's being built to run in nuclear power plants is coming from nuclear bombs that are being decommissioned at a rate. This is the part of the end of the Cold War. The Russians and the United States are decommissioning the nuclear warheads, and that's what they're using for fuel in your local nuclear power plant that were designed for low energy nuclear fuel. It would be like running a Ford Escort with high octane racing fuel, nitroglycerin racing fuel. These power plants were never designed to take this fuel. So as a result, when you get done burning it, you have to cool it because it's still hot. So every day, a higher and higher percentage of the energy that's produced at the nuclear power plant is used to simply cool the fuel that has been spent at that plant. They have no place to put it. There's no way to transport it. It's the deadliest stuff on this planet. And if they ever stop cooling any of these casks, a single one of them breaking could kill all life on Earth as we know it. I mean, this is not fun stuff. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they're simply owned and operated, like all the government agencies, simply owned and operated by Big Energy. Wow. What? This is the nuclear power industry in a nutshell. It's an absolute fiasco disaster. The plant at Fukushima is just a symbol of the industry, or Chernobyl, or Three Mile Island. The disasters that almost occurred a number of years ago during the flooding of the Missouri River, the power plants that were inundated, shut down with the cooling towers shut down, and no ability to cool the casks of nuclear fuel that are sitting around, just sitting right around outside of the nuclear power plant. When they get done, that's where they go. They just stay right there. So right in your neighborhood, right out your back door, are many, many casks. Latest statistic I saw was something like 75,000 tons of nuclear fuel are sitting in the United States right now, trying to cool this down with no place to put it, and with a life expectancy that's near infinite. What a disaster. What an absolute disaster. When none of this was ever necessary in the first place, the wing generation systems, we have to put them online. There's no option. Burning coal in oil, we have 50% of the oxygen in the atmosphere today that we had in 1900. You'll never find any of the scientists that work for global warming or the government projects or funding. You'll never hear them talking about that. They'll talk about a minuscule percent increase in global warming gases. I just heard another report of that on of the world globalist-owned public radio, National Public Radio, also trying to talk about the increase in greenhouse gases, which is not the problem. That's the mask. That's the thing that keeps anybody from talking about the real problem. We cannot continue burning coal and oil at the rate we're burning them. If you simply burn the amount of coal in the Orinoco Valley of Venezuela, you would burn all of the oxygen in our atmosphere. You can't keep burning oil. Sorry. Look at the alternative of using wind power, true wind power, that is efficient, that can produce high levels of power. That's what I have in the wing generation system. This is something that should have been online probably almost a decade ago, but every time it got close to off the ground, like I say, the financiers would simply disappear into the woodwork, and end of story. So at any rate, the only way to do this is to get it out into the public domain, show it to the public, distribute it, and then make it happen. That's the only way to deal with this particular technology. At this point, I'm going to read the table of contents, and these are the chapters in the book. So with that in mind, this is the title of the chapters from the book, new book that's on e-book that's on my webpage called McCanny Wing Generator. And by the way, the title, the full title is called McCanny Wing Generator Distributed Energy National Grid World Energy Project with a Supplement, The Myth of Alternative Energy. And so let me read the table of contents here. The traditional preface, etc., like that. There's a chapter on how to use the text, because this is not an average book that simply is to read and get an idea of what's going on. This is an actual how-to book, so to speak. There's a chapter on a critique of the standard three-blade wind generator, and this is something that everybody has to read, because looking back into the engineering of the three-blade wind generators, which are scattered all over the countryside, you will start to see that this thing should have never, ever seen the light of day, ever. So that's an extremely important chapter. It's called Critique of the Standard Three-Blade Wind Generator. The next chapter describes the wing generator. That's the technology that I'm presenting, giving generator configurations. And then there's a table of comparisons between the three-blade wind generator and the wing generator system. Then there's a chapter that talks about patents, trademarks, and open architecture. A chapter called Small Wing Generator Design. This is something that many people are interested in. It gives a design parameters to design and pictures, etc., to design a small home type of wind generator. It's about a 1.5 kilowatt generator using a couple alternators from a car. Very simple home design, and it's something to give people a taste of what wing generation design is all about. There's a chapter on frequently asked questions, a chapter on distributed energy. There's the chapter, the myth of alternative energy. There's a chapter, batteries and support equipment. There's a chapter on Tesla power. Remember, a number of years ago, I went out and I started working on a project that was basically to reproduce Tesla power, drawing energy, electrical energy, from the vertical electric field of the Earth, powered by the capacitor or the ionosphere to ground capacitor, something that Tesla was doing. I have a feasibility, and there's some serious problems with that, in the use of that entire technology. That chapter discusses all of that entire topic. There's a chapter on electric cars and distributed free energy. Now, I'm not talking about free energy that comes out of a little box you put in the center of a table and magically the energy of the universe starts coming out. This is energy that, once we set up the wing distribution and the wing generators, the large-scale generation plants, then the energy is literally free except for the maintenance of these systems. There's a chapter on world domination of major industries. There's a chapter called The Myth of the Smart Grid. That's a very important chapter. And then there's a chapter at the end on the history of my development efforts with this technology. So that's the heart of the book, Wing McCanny Wing Generator. So at any rate, that's something I believe you should take a look at. It's like I say, it's a very important contribution, and something that is going to be developed. It's going to be taken and developed, especially in third world countries, where inexpensive energy is simply going to happen. The Western countries, the Western developed countries like the United States, Western Europe, that resist this and rely on nuclear and coal and other forms of burning energy, are going to go by the wayside. They will not be able to compete with countries that can develop inexpensive, basically free energy. Energy that doesn't cost them an arm and a leg. Additionally, many third developing countries will be able to install things like direct powered wing systems for desalinization, for water, like reverse osmosis desalinization plants for clean water. At the very end, I talk about a vision that I have that someday the big oil tankers will be converted to moving fresh water. They'll be cleaned out, they'll be scrubbed out, and they will have direct drive wind generation of power, direct drive to operate these boats. Now remember that major boats do the following. They take whatever fuel they are burning, they convert it into electricity, and it is actually an electric motor or set of electric motors that drive the propellers. So that is the typical setup in a major, like a barge carrying oil or iron ore or whatever, or international trade, whatever it is. That is the typical scenario in a big ship. So replacing that with wing generation systems on deck to convert wind directly into power is something that we're going to see, and then convert those big tankers, the oil tankers, to move water from Antarctica or Greenland, where the water is melting, the ice packs are melting, and the water is simply flowing into the ocean, to capture that water and move it to places in great need of water. Let's move the water from the spring melt in the upper Midwest in the United States down to the American Southwest, where we can use all of that flood water instead of just letting it dump into the Mississippi River all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. Take that water and do something useful with it, green the American Southwest, the water being moved by pumps, which are direct drive from wing generation. These are just a few of the examples of solutions that can be had from this technology. So once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. That's JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And remember that the new book you can get if you buy $400 or more of any of the water filter books, CDs, other items on the webpage, you'll get a copy of the new book for free. And I'm about out of time here. I'm very excited about this new project, as you can see, and it's what I see as the way of the future. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.